You are listening to KUCI 88.9 FM in Irvine. The opinions expressed on this show are not necessarily those of the station, the university, or the UC Board of Regents. I'm Tina Spindler, and welcome to In the Garden with University of California Master Gardeners. Today we have a great topic about a really fun event that's coming up in our community that involves our local universities and a couple of our junior colleges as well. And that's the Solar Decathlon. And if you've never heard of or been to the Solar Decathlon before, it is the most amazing competition that is sponsored by the United States Department of Energy. And the competition invites universities to build a house that is powered by solar and other sustainable technologies. And this year, it is going to be located at the Great Park in Irvine, as it was 2 years ago. So if you didn't get to go 2 years ago, you have another chance to go this year. And it starts on October 8th, and it runs for 2 weekends, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, on the 8th, and then again on the 15th. And so I'm really excited to introduce to you today two of the folks who are participating in the Solar Decathlon. So first I'd like to introduce Cammie June and then also Heather Green. And Cammie, can we start with you, and can you tell us a little about your role in the Solar Decathlon project?
Sure. So I'm an administrative specialist for the Henry Samueli School of Engineering at UCI, and I'm also a Chapman University alumni. So I graduated in 2014, and I work with the communications and marketing students on the project.
Awesome. And Heather, can you tell us a little bit about your role in the project?
Yes, I'm a senior civil engineering student at UC Irvine. I got involved in the project in 2013, part of the water group, so I helped design any of the water aspects of the house. And I'm also doing construction management, so I'm making sure the house gets built.
Oh, that's a good thing.
Yes.
I understand they started construction today.
Yes, today was the kickoff.
Oh, my gosh.
So we all sort of like ran across like a start line over at the Great Park. All of the teams did.
Oh,
so
how fun.
That was pretty cool.
I assume somebody got that on video that we'll all get to
watch
today.
Yeah, I'm sure it's on the Solar Decathlon website.
Yeah, that's so fun. The house, I'm sure, is going to be amazing, and there are lots of different aspects of the house that we're not going to focus on too much because this show is in the garden. So we're going to try to talk a little bit more about the landscaping aspects and especially the water aspects because, as we all know, living in Southern California, it's just such a huge issue for all of us to have any water to use in our landscapes. So, but before we focus completely on that, I think it'd be interesting for the listeners to learn a little bit just about the team and your concept. I know that your team is called Team Orange County, and that's because it's not just one university. Maybe you can tell me, Cammie, about the various educational institutions that are involved in this project.
Yeah, so we are actually one of the competition's most diverse teams in history based on the educational institutes that we are part of our background. So we're made up of 4 different schools, a private university, Chapman University, a public institute, so, you know, UCI, and 2 community colleges, Saddleback College and Irvine Valley College. We're also the only team from Southern California. So we're kind of the home team of this year's competition, if you could. So it's just been a really eye-opening experience, I think, for all of the students. It's interdisciplinary in nature already, but being spread across 4 schools, I think the students not only got to work with other students from their schools and different majors, but different students from around the county. And just kind of like Orange County represents, you know, a lot of different age groups and cultures and, you know, socioeconomic levels and interests, our team reflects that as well. And so it was a really, it's been a really collaborative effort and a lot of fun.
That is so awesome. I especially think, you know, for 4 of these schools to work together, and of course the junior colleges have students that have a different level experience than Chapman, say, or UCI. And so I think for them to have that exposure is just, you know, so valuable. And of course, what you guys are doing is completely applicable to the real world. So in terms of getting students ready to have their careers, I can't imagine anything better to do. I visited your website, which, by the way, is a really, really cool website. So congratulations, because I assume
Thank you
had a lot to do with that.
Yes, I worked with a lot of the students, and we worked actually with the students who are in charge of engineering and architecture. And so all the students who spent, you know, these past 2 years designing the house, we had to learn from them all the special technological innovations and architectural design that went into it, and what essentially separates Team Orange County and our Casa del Sol from the rest of our competition, and make sure that the public knew exactly what that was. So there was a lot of content writing and building, and you know, we wouldn't have had as amazing things to show and share if our other counterparts on the team didn't come up with these amazing ideas.
Yeah, I love it, because there's, as for our listeners, you know, it's radio, we can't see anything.
Yeah.
So for sure, we want you to go visit the website, which is?
It's teamoc2015.com.
So do go see the website, because they've got some great animation that shows the different components of the house. And it's just really, really fun to watch. So that's a great place to go. The other thing that I learned from the website is that you have four guiding principles that have been followed in order to produce, I imagine, every aspect of the home. And those are passive solar is one of them. And then disruptive innovation, which, wow, that was really a new term for me. So I'll let you tell a little bit about that. Then also considered was the Southern California market appeal. So great for business people to know that the students are being practical and trying to determine that this house will be saleable and usable. And then finally, my favorite part of it that we'll talk to Heather a lot about is drought resilience, which, of course, all of us, every single resident of Southern California has to figure out how to make that happen in their own lives. So first, can you tell us just briefly, and I don't know which one of you would want to explain a little bit about the passive solar. What's the passive solar?
So I'll talk about that.
Thanks, Tammy.
So the passive solar design really element really talks about our architecture. So that means the way that Casa del Sol was designed, and even the orientation it was plotted on our little site, has everything to do with the sun's path over Orange County, over Irvine, and our Santa Ana winds that come in every fall, and as well as our prevailing winds from the ocean. And so what we wanted to make sure is, since this is an energy-saving competition, is that we saved all of our energies for when we really, really needed it. So with this passive solar design, that means we shaped our house in order to cool it down or keep it cool without having to rely on the house's energy supply. So the strongest parts of our house and our walls face where the hot Santa Ana winds come in. So a lot of teams in the 2013 competition, if you're not from Orange County, you don't typically anticipate high gust winds coming in.
I was there. It was horrible. We had one of the worst Santa Ana conditions 2 years ago, and I'm glad that you said your strongest thing is there, because I know there were students who were having, you know, literal trouble with some of the elements of their homes being affected by the wind. So very smart of this
group. It was very, very good thinking and timing-wise, too, to think about when the competition would be, even in that far in advance. And then our most open parts of the house let in our prevailing winds from the coast. And so our house will actually open its windows or open slots throughout the house to let the breeze in before it'll kick on the AC.
That's awesome. So,
you know, just the house will do that on its own. Of course, you know, you can operate it manually, but, you know, just the house functioning like that on its own, or to think that way, was, I think, the innovative part of that. And then our disruptive innovation, that kind of talks to about our engineering and technology in the house, which Heather can actually speak to from an engineering standpoint.
Yeah. So disruptive innovation, another synonym for that would be kind of cutting edge technology.
Yeah, like innovative technology. It's kind of an industry term. Okay. So for things like cell phones or laptops, things like that. And so our mechanical room, which kind of holds our whole like HVAC system for the house and our water pumps and things like that, is stationed right next to our 3D print room of the future.
Oh.
Yeah, so a tool room of the future, you know, kind of like dad's workshop, but instead of hammers and, you know, nuts and bolts, we've got 3D printers and laser scanners and things like that to further promote a sustainable, recyclable lifestyle. So residents can, you know, instead of going out and buying new, you know, door handles or kitchen counter knobs, they can create their own.
Wow.
Yeah, and then we move from there to our... What was the third one? The third one is
the market appeal, yeah.
Yeah, so our Southern California market, obviously Orange County is undergoing not only a drought, but we're also a huge increase in our population. So with that, we are looking by, I think, 2060, we should have up to 1.5 to 2 million more people in Orange County.
Wow.
In that same span, we're moving away from the traditional pyramidal age structure breakdown, where we've got a lot of, you know, young infants, and then as we get older into the adults and, you know, senior citizens, it kind of peaks off into a pyramid type shape. So by 2060, we'll actually be moving more to a 1-to-1 ratio, a cylinder rectangular type shape, which means there'll be just as many infants as there are senior citizens.
Interesting.
And so our house is designed to kind of fit a multi-generational aspect living. And so our main house, it's each team is allowed 1,000 square feet of conditioned space.
Uh-huh.
So instead of having one large house, we've actually separated our property into two separate areas of conditioned space. So one, the main house, it's got, you know, the master bedroom, but it also has this flex room. So you can kind of turn it into an office or an extra children's room, or maybe, you know, I'm sure like Heather and I can attest, a lot of college kids who leave and then come home really quick and move back home to kind of save up some money and get a head start in that before moving on. Or, you know, aging grandparents, you know, don't want to, you know, be by themselves, but also don't want to interfere too much or kind of still have their own space. So the separate studio really allows for that. Or even just a separate rental. You know, OC, it's getting really, really expensive to live here. And so a lot of houses, you know, that kind of leaves an option for a secondary income. And so we kind of took all of these components. I mean, a lot of that is Orange County. And so we wanted to make sure that we addressed all of them. I don't think one really kind of takes the precedence over the other. So that was kind of our concept or idea behind having separate studios.
Wow. So this is quite a lot of thought, not just in, I'm sure when we start talking to Heather about the technical aspects of planning some of the water recapture and efficient use of water, those technical aspects obviously take a lot of study and knowledge, but it sounds like before you even get to the nitty-gritty components of the home, an awful lot of thought went into its purpose, the population it was going to serve, and how to best fit our environment, which is amazing. Great job. So Heather, let's start talking a little bit about the fourth principle that you guys have adopted for this house, and that's the drought resilience. Can you just kind of give us kind of the big picture of what the issues are that you see in developing a home that is drought resilient?
So since we're designing our home for Southern California, obviously we're in a big drought down here. So one of our main key components was that our house can withstand a drought. So that means that we're going to be recycling our water, that our plants can, you know, go a couple weeks without rain or getting water on them, like, so you don't need sprinklers on all the time. Because if you live in Southern California, you sort of know the new law and policies that are going on about watering your plants. So those were our key factors when we started designing the water and landscape of the house.
That's awesome. I hope that your technology is something that the rest of us can adopt in our existing homes, because we're all looking for those ways. You mentioned that, you know, we have these new restrictions on everyone every water district is encouraging through pricing for us all to be super water efficient. And so if we go over our allocation, it really hurts from a financial standpoint. So I'm interested to see what you guys do and figure out how we can adopt it in some of our existing homes.
Yeah, and there are actually really simple ways to adopt in your house. Like, we have drip irrigation on our landscape, which is pretty much just like black tubing that water drips through instead of using a sprinkler. So you save water because you're not just spraying water across the plants and losing the water. It's just dripping into the plants. We have a vertical garden in the back of our house, which will have edible plants, and it's like a hydroponic system, so it takes the water and recycles it through from the top down to the bottom.
So tell me a little bit more about the vertical gardening system. Last 2 years ago at that solar decathlon, I was fascinated because there were several of the houses that had different kinds of vertical garden systems. Some of them, sounds like yours is hydroponic, some of the ones I saw the last time actually used soil, but they had structures that held the soil, you know, vertically up against a wall so that you had these living walls. But the hydroponic way of growing food is fascinating to me. Can you tell me a little bit more about how that system is working?
Yeah, so we're actually having a company design and build the system for us.
Uh-huh.
So we didn't really do the design, but it's pretty much like a vertical garden, and there's piping that recycles the water from the top down to the bottom. So it's continuously recycling the water to feed the vegetables, so none of that water is going to waste.
Great. And does that water come from the normal water source? Like, if I was going to take, fill up a pot to cook spaghetti, I'm getting potable water. Is the vertical garden using that kind of water?
So for the vertical garden, it is using potable water because the vertical garden has edible vegetables on it. So, of course, one of the laws, you can't be using your gray water on your edible food. But the rest of the house and landscape is all using gray water. So
that's a great point to make for our listeners who are gardeners, because as a master gardener, when we're out and about and people are trying to be really water conscious, they've been asking, you know, well, I hear about these gray water systems, you know, I'd like to implement one, and then I want to use it to water my garden. And we always say the same thing. That's absolutely a great idea, but where you're growing edibles, use your potable water. Use your fresh water, not your reclaimed or recycled water, gray water from your home, because you're not totally positive how the gray water system, if it's going to completely eliminate any potential bacteria for your food.
Right, and there's ways to clean the water, and we looked through those, like sand filters and different chemicals and things, but just for the competition, it's a lot more safer and simple to use your gray water elsewhere and just use the fresh water on the vegetables.
So tell me how your gray water system works. So you capture your water that you've already used, and then you use it to irrigate your landscape plants that you're not going to eat.
Yes.
Take me through that process. I take a shower, and now the water that I've used to bathe, that's gray water, right? How
yes.
are you getting it, and how are you directing it out to your landscape?
Mm-hmm. So for this competition, a lot of the key components are just different guidelines, things you have to meet during the competition. So they, like, pull hot water from your shower. So specifically for the competition, our gray water is coming from the shower, the clothes washer, and the dishwasher. And the water will be gravity fed down to a gray water tank. So this tank only holds gray water. And then that gray water will then be pumped directly to the landscape. So it will go through a pump, and then get the pressure will be taken down a notch, so it will go through a drip irrigation system to the landscape. And all of that water is pretty much clean still, so, like, because your shower water and things like that, it's still okay for the landscape.
Great. So that gray water in your system doesn't have to be treated. It's just, it's water that has been used to wash clothes or take
right.
a shower or wash dishes. So there's not anything, there's no sewage, there's no waste from
right,
bodily
right.
fluids or anything like that.
Right. So we kind of talked to a couple different mentors about doing some sort of sand filter and things, and we came up with a couple designs for sand filters. But for this competition, just since the water is coming, like the shower water is actually just being pulled directly from the shower, you really don't need a sand filter or anything like that. But if you were to implement something like this in your own house, I would recommend some sort of filter. You could easily make yourself, you know, like just get a bucket of sand or something and have the water filter through there and then into your pipes, because that's really simple. But just for the competition, we didn't think that something like that was necessary. Yeah.
So how does sand filter the water? I mean, I know it's obviously it just drains through, but as it drains through sand, what happens to the gray water?
Yeah, so sand is one of the initial filters because it kind of pulls out any particles floating in the water. So that's like the main filter. And then there's also chemical processes you could do, but that's also not very necessary for a landscape type of thing.
Right.
So the sand just grabs on to any particles that you wouldn't want in there. Like, say if you were showering and you had hair particles or things like that, it would catch on to them so that that's not being redistributed to your landscape or whatever you're using it for.
Got it. So then if it's stored in a tank, is the tank, I assume you're not digging holes at the
No.
part. So the tank is just an above ground tank that sits outside the home?
Yeah, it actually will be sitting under the deck of the home because yeah, the homes are kind of lifted up a couple feet above finished grade. So it's how we designed it was so that it will be directly under the shower so that any of the water will be gravity fed into the tank. So we're not, you know, it's an energy competition, so we're not using extra energy to pump the water from one side of the house to another. So the water will just be gravity fed to the tank, which is under the deck. And then from there, we're doing a piping and pump system to the landscape.
So then that goes out to the landscape through traditional irrigation valves and then to the drip system?
So we'll have a small piping system with a pump, and then that will go down to the pressure of it will be reduced to a drip irrigation system, because for a drip irrigation system, you really want low pressure. It's kind of just like a black tubing the water flows through, and you poke holes in the tubing and the water drips out. So
yeah,
we
in other of our shows encourage our listeners to use drip irrigation, to switch from overhead sprinklers to drip irrigation type systems, because as you said, they save so much water. First of all, you don't have all the evaporation from the spray.
Exactly.
And then second of all, you don't have all the runoff.
Yeah.
Which, you know, when we spray, half the time we're hitting our driveways and sidewalks and who knows what else. So so just another plug to everyone who's listening, you know, consider drip irrigation for your landscape. It'll really cut your water usage down a lot. So tell me a little bit about this landscape that you're irrigating with the gray water. What are you planting there? What does it look like?
So the key focus was to stick to California natives or drought-tolerant plants, because I know in the 2013 competition, a lot of the schools that came in from other areas brought in plants that weren't really used to Southern California weather, and their plants died out during the competition. So, So I think we kind of got the bit of the home team advantage because, you know, we've been growing our plants in Orange County and the competition's in Orange County, so I don't think we'll have any issue during the competition of our plants dying off or something like that. So
because we've also been doing shows for our listeners about switching to landscapes that use less water because of our current drought, and our water districts encouraging us to adopt these drought-tolerant landscapes, but we've also encouraged everyone to wait over the summer. You know, don't do it. But now that it's October, you know, we're about ready for folks to get started. It's a little bit hot right now, but, you know, hopefully it'll cool off in a couple of weeks. And so can you tell our listeners what plants you are going to be planting? So if they're planning in their minds what they might do in their own landscapes, maybe some of these plants that you guys are using could inspire them to use theirs.
Yeah. So I'll list off a couple plants, and then also another way that we picked these plants was pretty cool. I know that if you live in the Irvine or Orange County area, the Irvine Ranch Water District gave us a website to use. You kind of click through it, and it helps you pick local plants for your neighborhood that helps you save water. But a list of our plants is we are using the foxtail agave, the Pars agave, the blue glow agave, the emerald carpet manzanita, which is the only tree we have in the house, and that's sort of the in the front of our house so that the people who walk by, you know, get attracted to our landscape. We also have a dusty miller, Cleveland sage, which sort of occupies the main part of the back of our house next to the vertical garden, and then Huntington carpet rosemary.
Those are great choices, and because it's radio and you can't see them, I'll just give a little description of some of them. So the agaves are somewhat cactusy looking plants, but very architecturally striking. They're just beautiful, and some of them have thorny type sides, and some of them do not, and they come in all different shades of green and gray and almost blue. They're just can be very, very attractive in the landscape. And then the manzanita tree that you're using, those are just gorgeous. They come in everything from ground cover varieties to a small tree. They don't get to be huge trees, which is so perfect for our Orange County landscape, because most of us have, you know, really small lots, and you don't want to plant a tree that's going to get to be, you know, 100 feet tall. So excellent choice. And the thing that's cool about the manzanitas is that a lot of them have that really red bark, which is so attractive just in and of itself, just the bark. And then they bloom every winter and early spring with these really cute little bell-shaped kind of flowers. And the tree is evergreen, so which means it keeps its leaves all year. So actually fabulous choice of your landscape.
Thank
group.
You.
Yeah, really good. And then, of course, you mentioned the rosemary. And, you know, I love that as a landscape plant because you can cook with it. It's edible, you know, and you can use it to season your marinades for your meats, even in baked goods. It's just a fabulous, fabulous plant. And then the dusty miller is that silvery gray annual semi-perennial plant that we've seen in lots and lots of flower gardens. It's not known for its flowers. It's known for its really cool gray foliage. So great choices. I think you guys did a fabulous job, and they're all drought tolerant, and they will all be really happy with drip irrigation because a lot of natives don't like to get their leaves wet, their surfaces wet, because think about it, how often do we get rain here?
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
Not so much. And so while
just during construction.
Exactly. And so while they tolerate it, you know, a couple months out of the year, they really aren't meant to get water on their surfaces, you know, 12 months out of the year. So the drip irrigation makes so much more health sense for these plants as well when folks are switching out to these drought-tolerant plants.
Yeah, and you talked about rain there for a second. Another key aspect of our house for the water saving is we have rain barrels sort of on all four corners of the house to do rain capture. Even though in Southern California it doesn't rain often, when it does, it's just smart to hold on to that rain that you can capture and reuse it, because, you know, when it's raining, if there's a period of 7 hours of rain, your plants don't always need all that water at once, so it's good to capture it and slowly use it during a couple weeks and whatnot. So we got these really cool rain barrel tanks. They're actually called hog rain barrels. They're really aesthetically pleasing, so you could put them on the side of your house vertically, and your rain gutters will capture the water and then pour them right into the tanks, and you could just open the tank and put the water into a spigot and then water your plants whenever you need to. So
that is awesome. I think we're going to see a lot more of that, especially in new construction, and my bet is, if it doesn't already exist, there will be companies who are coming around to existing homes and saying, hey, we can put these rain barrels and attach them to your gutters, and then you're going to have this extra source of water when we don't have water.
Yeah, exactly. And a lot of the rain barrels even look nice and kind of add to your landscape, so it's, you know, it brings more more aesthetics to your garden.
Yeah, the old-fashioned ones, or the ones that used to be available, were pretty ugly.
Yeah.
And I even did a video for a gardening company on how to make one yourself, which is pretty cool. You know, if you want to do it and you are on a budget, you can actually make them out of plastic 32-gallon trash cans mm-hmm. by, you know, cutting a hole in it and hooking up a downspout to your existing rain gutter system. So there's lots of different ways to create rain barrels, but to have it look good,
yeah,
that's another issue altogether. Well, I want to hear more about those, but I have
okay.
to pause for just a second and let everyone know that you are listening to KUCI 88.9 FM in Irvine, and that the opinions that are expressed on this show are not necessarily those of the station, the university, or the UC Board of Regents. But Heather, you know, I'd like to know just a little bit more, because I'm not familiar with these hog rain barrels.
Mm-hmm.
Can you describe to me, do they look kind of like the traditional rain barrel, you know, just the round, you know, trash can type shape, or do they look different than that?
No, they're actually rectangular looking rain tanks, and they're sort of like an olive green color. So they sort of blend into the plants, and they look very environmental friendly. You know, the new thing is being environmental friendly. So
sure.
they sort of have this, like, eco-friendly look to them. And you can install them pretty much any way you want on your house. You can hook them up vertically to the wall or horizontally under your house or whatnot. But I think they're really neat looking because of their color. And they're a plastic tank, so they're not like those old wooden-looking ones.
Right.
You know, so they kind of bring this, like, eco-friendly look.
So the gutters on the roof of the house
mm-hmm.
Collect the water that's coming off the roof.
Right.
And then there's a downspout, and then the downspout hooks into the tank. Is that how it works?
Yeah.
Realistically?
Yeah. We thought it would be simple, but when we sort of were, just 2 weeks ago, we were figuring out how to pipe the gutter to your
uh-huh.
tank. We went to Home Depot and were like asking them how to do it, and it's not a very well-known thing. So you kind of have to figure out the right pieces. We ended up having to go with some plumbing pieces to hook it to the tank, but we figured it out, and
oh,
it's definitely doable, but in Orange County, I don't think people are used to coming up with those designs. So
is the hog tank available to the public? I mean, is it something they can order online, or is it at stores? How do they
yeah,
find it?
Yeah, we actually ordered ours online. I'm not sure what stores they sell them in. They're not at, like, Home Depot or anything like that, but they do sell them online, and I'm sure online they show you different stores you could purchase them at.
Okay, and probably instructions on
yeah.
how to assemble them.
Exactly.
So these capture the rain if and when it ever rains,
mm-hmm.
but it is supposed to be an El Nino year,
yeah.
so we're all keeping our fingers crossed. And then that water is stored in there, and,
mm-hmm.
and the way that you use it is there's like a spigot, a water spigot on it?
Yeah, exactly. There's a water spigot, and how we're using it for the competition I think is kind of cool. We're going to hook up the spigot to a pipe that goes up to a hand pump, so you sort of hand pump it into like a...
watering can?
A watering can, yeah, exactly. So you hand pump it into a watering can, and then you could water what plants you want, or you could even hand pump it directly onto the plants if you wanted to.
Cool. I'm envisioning, you know, people who have kids. I mean, what kid isn't going to want to go out and hand pump that?
Yeah,
that water
exactly.
All over the place.
Yeah, yeah.
So can you hook a hose up and then
yeah,
carry
you could.
A hose?
Exactly.
And have somebody back there hand pumping it.
Yeah.
So that you could,
yeah, pretty much.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So you'll see it during the competition.
That's awesome. I love that. How many? Do you know how many gallons each tank holds?
Yeah, they're about 75-gallon tanks.
Wow.
So,
mm-hmm. So it. I mean, you probably don't know because it hasn't rained. But can you guess how long it would take to fill up if there was a little bit of a rain
yeah,
storm.
So we did the calculations. It really just depends on the square footage of your roof and if your roof is slanted, and a lot of different things go into it. But we estimated that we would need 3 tanks for our house, depending on the square footage and everything, during a typical Southern California rainstorm. So if there was like a larger rainstorm in Southern California, it would be able to fill up 2 to 3 tanks. So
wow.
around.
So that's 150, 225
yeah,
gallons
exactly.
of water.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that should water a few plants.
Yeah.
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 That is so cool. Let's see, what else did I want to ask you about on the garden? So we've talked about, I know, on the edible garden.
Mm-hmm.
We left that topic, and I had thought of a few questions, so let me ask them again. So what are the dimensions of this hydroponic system, vertical garden system mm-hmm. that you're using?
So I think they're about 5 to 6 feet tall.
Okay.
Yeah, and then if anyone comes to competition, you'll see our house. We have a large back deck in the back of our house, and the vertical garden will pretty much cover the entire back corner of the deck. So it will wrap around the deck, so it will look really cool to have these, you know, colorful vegetables around the walls of the deck.
So is this thing modular then? Do you buy, mm-hmm. pieces of it, and you can kind of make it go as long as you want it to?
Yeah, exactly. There was a company that wanted to design them for us, so they're doing uh-huh. different pieces. I would say they're probably 3 to 4 feet wide and 6 feet high. So then you order a couple pieces, and, you know, you get to pick out what vegetables you want. And part of our competition is we have to cook a dinner uh-huh. for the other competitors and for the jury. So uh-huh. it'll be cool to actually use, you know, some of the gardens from the vegetable to cook.
Interesting. And yeah. So what has the company that you have fabricating this, mm-hmm. Have they suggested the types of vegetables that this system is good for?
Yeah, I think it's really good for things like tomatoes because, you know, tomatoes grow easily, and uh-huh. Lighter vegetables because since they're hanging, you don't want like big heavy things like
so no big artichokes exactly. or apple trees or
right.
anything like
pumpkin.
That.
Pumpkin.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah.
So I see a lettuce garden, yeah. I see herb garden.
Definitely mm-hmm. a lot of herbs.
Yeah. Mostly herbs.
So Cammie, have you seen any of the proposals on what they want to plant in there?
I've seen a few drafts, and the list changes quite a bit over 2 years,
sure.
You know, but what we really were trying to do is think of, you know, as Heather mentioned, we have these dinners, so we have to have two dinners to kind of show functionality-wise this house can host and entertain
sure.
beyond just, you know, the traditional family who lives there. But what we really wanted to do was kind of, so our outdoor, the back patio, that's where also where our outdoor dining room is.
Okay.
So where we're hosting this dinner will be right around all the right by the edible vertical garden. So what we were really trying to do is think about what we wanted to serve
uh-huh.
and then kind of what ingredients or plants or herbs or spices that we could essentially grow in our backyard and also use in our dinners.
Sure.
To, you know, again, further promote the recyclable, sustainable lifestyle.
Yeah.
And how you can really make that possible in such a small space. So with the garden being vertical. So I don't know too much about the specific
right.
spices or vegetables that we've decided on, but I do know that each was chosen for a very specific reason and that there was a lot of attention to detail that
so that you could actually use what you're planting.
Exactly. And recognize it. Yes.
Because I think I'll just reiterate to the listeners. You keep hearing us talk about competition, and this is a competition. These schools are in it to win awards, and not just for, you know, the technical aspects of the home, but for the livability aspects of the home. And that's why they were saying they have to have a meal that's prepared, and they host the other team because they get judged on whether or not the house is successful in providing that kind of lifestyle, correct?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, exactly. So the 10 different contests are designed to basically educate the public and all its visitors that a sustainable lifestyle or being responsible, it doesn't really mean you have to be, you know, spend a lot of money or, you know, buy all these things that people have never heard of, but really being sustainable comes down to being educated on which choices to make. And this contest within those 10 or this entire competition and its individual 10 contests does that. So this is the first year there's a commuting component.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, so each day the house not only has to, so our team has to drive an electric vehicle 25 miles, you know, total each day, but we have to charge that vehicle with the house.
Oh, wow.
And then, you know, over this 10-day competition, we have an energy budget of 175 kilowatts of energy.
Uh-huh.
To put that into perspective, the average adult in Southern California uses about 165 kilowatts of energy per hour per person.
Wow.
Per person per day.
Per person per day. Wow.
Per person per day. So our energy budget's really cut tight, and that commuting contest has now added an extra element of kind of a constraint.
Using up some of that energy.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And so kind of every 2 years this contest changes and evolves a little bit. The rules are slightly different than the one, you know, the competition prior. And it's to kind of further push the boundaries of that. So like we added this commuting contest this year. Last year, homes were allowed to produce as much solar power as they wanted. So essentially, you were uncapped, but now there's a cap. So kind of, yeah, so there's different, you know, they make different things kind of based on each year. There's been plenty of times where we've reached out to DOE and been like, oh, can we do this or can we do that? Mm-hmm. And they're like, it's a great question. No one's ever asked that. If you're going to do this, then these are guidelines for that. So, I mean, even each year, each team, their ideas shape the competition next. Wow. So it's really growing and really interesting. So it's definitely been a challenge in keeping everything into consideration before moving forward with the final decision.
I can imagine. and I'm picturing everyone out there today just working like a busy little...
Yeah. The next 10 days will be like that. Yeah. Our work hours, we're allowed to be on site from 7 a.m. till 2 a.m.
So 2 a.m. Oh
yeah, so all these college students are out in the same big parking lot working like these crazy hours. So it's fun though because yesterday we had this big team meeting, so you met all the other competition or like all your competitions. So you meet, you know, college students. There's a team from Germany and a team from South Carolina, and you know everyone's in the same competition. And we had all of our ideas based on what we thought of from Southern California, but all these other teams have their ideas about from where they live, you know. So there's a house that's designed to withstand like hurricanes and stuff like that, and it's just like such a different thought process.
Sure.
So it'll definitely be a diverse competition this year, I think. So it'll be really cool to see, you know, what house thinks of what.
Yeah, yeah. So the 10 competitions. Can you guys tell me what those are, or how you're
yeah, so we're judged on architecture, engineering, communication, affordability, comfort zone, home electronics.
See if we missed anything.
Okay, not home electronics, but home life, commuting, appliances, comfort zone.
Sounds like we
energy balance. I might have gone over, but those were all.
Oh yeah, no, I think you hit them all. Yeah. Sorry to put you on the spot.
No, that's okay. I was looking at. We had a meeting in here, so yeah. I was looking at those. That's where I was reading it off of. But pretty much the main thing is like for the engineering and comfort zone, that's really similar. So it's like how your HVAC and mechanical system works to cool down the house. And that has to be in line with how much energy you use because you can't go over your energy budget. So
sure.
That, and then affordability, if you spent a ton of money on your HVAC system, then, you know, that's showing the public, like, that it's not doable to do an affordable house. So sure. You have to be able to hit all these aspects while keeping your house affordable.
Sure, because if you had the ultimate pocketbook, you could spend a gajillion dollars, but it wouldn't be practical for anyone else to replicate.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So.
Wow, I can't imagine that it, or I can only imagine how complicated it is to keep all of these constraints in your mind as you're trying to go about designing these incredible homes. So my hat's off to you guys, and to think that you're all students, you know, you're not professionals who have experience in this field. It's but in a way, I think that's a lot better because, you know, those of us with experience, I think, tend to get stuck in ruts where when you are innovative and looking at things with fresh eyes, you come up with fresh solutions.
Yeah, definitely. And I think at universities, they're now teaching more about sustainability and things like that. So it's kind of, you know, forcing you to think about new ways to be sustainable. And, you know, because we've been meeting with mentors who have been in the industry for years, but we also have classes where we're learning new things in the industry. So it's kind of like combining new ideas that you learn in school or think of with mentors that have been practicing and can give you their advice and knowledge.
That's great. So you do have a connection to people in the various industries who have
been
able to mentor you on some of the
things
to think about and steps to take.
Yeah, I don't think we would be able to do it just alone as students. That would be that would be impossible.
I would think so. I mean, my goodness.
Yeah.
my husband and I built a home, and you know, and we hired a contractor, right? So
yeah.
all we had to do was say yes or no to different things. And that was an incredibly complex process. I can't imagine trying to understand all of these systems without having someone who has experience in those areas.
Yeah, because I'm studying engineering, but then when you actually go to design a house, it's not really what you learn in school, obviously.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
you need some sort of mentor and everything. But we have several mentors helping with engineering and landscape and design. Pretty much every aspect of the house, we had some help
mentors.
From mentors, yeah,
That's
which
great.
Was great.
That's great. So how do you get mentors? How do you reach out to them?
It was sort of just like people who have heard of the competition, you know, contacted us, or if we reached out to people that were involved with the campuses. Like I know that here at UC Irvine we have like a senior design program, and they use specific engineering companies like LPA and things like
uh-huh.
that. And
yeah.
so we would reach out to those companies, and then also there's a lot of mentors and professionals that have helped Solar Decathlon teams in the past.
Uh-huh.
So they are just really involved in the competition and like to help different Solar Decathlon teams.
Oh,
so
that's great.
Mm-hmm.
That's really heartening to hear that, mm-hmm. that you have this connection, you know, to the professional community.
Yeah.
To help mentor, and then also hopefully it gives you guys a broader education, you know, not just classroom education but practical education.
Yeah.
And contacts in the industry for later, so that you can get real jobs and not have to move into your parents' house, right?
Like that. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, that's what I think is one of the best things about the competition is, one, the experience you get working with adults, and I think about like half the students on our team got internships or jobs through it.
Yeah,
I've gotten two different internships through
wow.
the competition.
I love that.
And yeah, it's just like a great introduction into the working world and working with professionals and...
Yeah, that's the trick, you know, making
yeah.
that bridge from academia to the real world,
mm-hmm.
is, you know, I mean, I remember it was scary and tricky when I did it a long time ago, so it's great that it has given you guys that heads up. Now, I know Heather, because she is a student, has to take off, so we're going to say goodbye to Heather, but if it's okay, Cammie,
okay.
I'd like to talk to you just a little bit more
yeah, of course.
About wrapping up a few more items for our listeners to figure out. Now, in addition to going to the website and visiting the home, if the visitors come to your home, is there going to be information that they can take with them, that they can ponder and maybe look for to, you know, research and apply to their own personal situations?
Yeah, so every team as part of a communications contest has to design and give out a handout for
okay.
someone to lead with. And so, you know, we have this cute little seed packet replica that we actually had a UCI staff person custom artwork on the front. So it's got a rendering
cool.
of our house on the front, and we decided to replicate it into a seed packet because
uh-huh.
all of our handouts actually have little California poppy seeds inside. So our
no
visitors
way.
Can then...
Oh, you just made me so happy!
Yeah, so we really wanted to tie in, you know, the poppy and that narrative of our home. And so in these little handouts that have poppy seeds, planting instructions for the poppies, but also a list of all the technological innovations and components of our house that they learned about on the tour, as well as a little layout of the house showing you kind of where those things are in the house.
And so every visitor
will get one of those.
Oh, so cool.
And what we've actually also done is we've partnered with a student group at UCI, their graduate students, who designed this app. It's called the Kaleri app.
Say it again?
Kaleri app.
How do you spell that?
K-A-L-E-R-I.
K-A-L-E-R-I. Kaleri. Okay.
Yeah, so it is I think it's Greek or Latin for gallery.
Uh-huh.
And so it's designed with beacon technology, so Bluetooth beacons. So instead of depending on Wi-Fi or like 4G, it's all powered by location, so Bluetooth. And it's originally designed for artists and people who go to galleries or museums.
Okay.
And so it'll let them know on their phone, kind of in the area, a local gallery that they can stop by, And what this app does is as you walk through the gallery, you know, you go through one room and the six art pieces in that particular room pop up on your phone, and you can actually learn about the artist who did them, like the inspiration behind the piece. And then when you leave the gallery, you've got the entire collection of art that you just saw plus the backstory. So what we've done with them is we worked with them to manipulate the back end of their app to target it for Casa del Sol.
Okay.
So Casa del Sol will essentially be its own exhibit, and each art piece is actually the component, a specific component in the house.
Wow.
So as guests, if they download the app, walk through the house, as they walk through the kitchen, they're going to see the components in the kitchen kind of pop up on their phone, and they can read about each individual, you know, the LED lights or the USB outlets. Yeah, and so what we wanted to do with that is we've got about 5 to 10 minutes to give this person a tour of our home. And in 5 to 10 minutes, they're not going to grasp every single component. Our goal is to essentially just teach them how they all work together to make the house more innovative or more efficient. But what this app allows them to do is then after the tour, they can go home and say, oh, what was it about this specific component that made it innovative? Or how did, you know, this HVAC system reduce the amount of energy that the house needed to use? And they can go back and look on it and say, oh, okay, so this is the product they used, or this is how that worked, this and that. Or if they download the app prior to, while they're, you know, waiting in line or before they come to the competition, as they're going on the tour, they can have it on with them. And as the tour guide starts talking about, and we did this to save paper. So our handout is small. We didn't want to cram 30 components on a piece of paper.
That ruins the whole point of being sustainable.
Exactly. So we were like, okay, we'll make them an app. And then they can download the app.
Fabulous.
Yeah.
So as they're coming up to the vertical hydroponic garden, they will get information about the vertical hydroponic garden.
Exactly. And there's also information about each work group and the students who are involved in those work groups, kind of a little story behind them, if you will. Because over 2 years, we've had, I'd say between the four campuses, give or take 100 students or so. But, you know, UCI is a quarter system, IBC, Saddleback, Chapman are all semester systems. We're all on different schedules, different finals, homework, vacations.
Oh my gosh.
So keeping everybody all on the same page, you know.
Who managed that? That's just a task in and of itself. Do you have an MBA student who managed all that?
Oh, I know, right? We probably should have. Our project manager, Alex, so he's a student here at UCI, graduate student. And, he's been real instrumental in keeping everyone organized, but I think the real success of the team has just come from each student's individual willingness to be a part of the project.
Wow.
Everyone has kind of brought in their two cents, and, you know, the app let, you know, students who are into technology and communications and marketing be a part of this project that has to do with sustainability and, you know, work with engineers and architects and construction management students to really pull all of that together.
That is truly amazing. And what is most amazing to me is that this is being done by students who have limited, you know, real world experience, although it sounds like they've had some good mentoring. But to be presented with that kind of a challenge at the age and with the limited experience they have and pull this off. And I have to tell our listeners, because I went to this thing 2 years ago, and it is amazing. Do not miss it. What it really gave to me was just such great inspiration and hope for the future when you see what our young people are capable of doing and the problems that they're capable of solving for our world. I was inspired. And so don't listen to the evening where it's depressing. Come to the Solar Decathlon where you can see great hope for the future. And also I want to let our listeners know, when you go to the Solar Decathlon, I'm going to give a very plug, just total plug for Master Gardeners, since this is in the garden with Master Gardeners. The University of California Master Gardeners help take care of and have created exhibits at a demonstration garden that will be directly across from the entrance to the Solar Decathlon.
Oh, wow.
And it's called the Farm and Food Lab, and it actually has a vertical garden in the farm and food lab. It actually has a couple. And so I encourage our listeners to, when you come out to the Solar Decathlon, head over to the farm and food lab to get a little more information and inspiration about landscaping and edibles, because the farm and food lab mostly focuses on growing edibles. And you can also get more information about edibles or any gardening questions by visiting the University of California Master Gardener website, which is uccemg.com. And you can also, if you have your own gardening questions, I don't know if you have a garden, Cammy, but if you have a garden or even a sick house plant, you can email us at hotline@uccemg.com. And also, the other reason to go to the website is we will have a podcast of this show up on the uccemg.com website. So if you want to tell your friends about this information so that they can get a little bit of the story behind the Solar Decathlon, they can go visit our website and listen to the podcast as well. So, Cammy, thank you so much.
I really enjoyed this.
I really enjoyed it too. You guys are amazing, and I know that we couldn't have, you know, too many of the other students here because they are busy building the house.
They're building the house.
But just give them our thanks for this wonderful effort.
Definitely will.
And we'll see them out there. Thanks so much.
Thank you.